Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
This upcoming concert season will be all about the boots, and Tecovas is your stop for the best in Western style. Tecovas has seasonal and limited edition offerings this spring and summer, including men's and women's boots, apparel, hats, bags, and more. All Tecovas boots are made by hand in a time-honored tradition with timeless styles that are always on trend. And Tecovas has first wear comfort with little to no break-in period. It's hard to find this level of comfort paired with this level of style. Stop by your local Tecovas store, have a complimentary drink or two, that's WCB style, and shop new styles. The smell of fresh leather and friendly staff are at your service. Many stores even have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized, and with regular live music and events, there's no in-store experience like it. If you can't make it into a store, just visit tecovas.com, that's T-E-C-O-V-A-S.com. They offer free shipping on all boots, as well as free returns and exchanges, and ship right to your door. Go to tecovas.com and find your new favorite pair of boots today.
Oh, here we go, boys.
Go.
Ooh, I love that sound. This is a good one.
Welcome everybody to the Full Scale Outdoors Podcast. This is your Waterfowl Wednesday host, Nick Johnson. This week we're going to be doing the same thing we did last week. We're going to be going through some more interesting waterfowl articles and starting out with a product review. I just picked up a brand new lanyard this week. I never thought I'd be so excited to get a new lanyard, but this actually is a great, functional, attractive piece of equipment. I bought one from Knotty Ropes Lanyards. You can find them on Instagram at Knotty, spelled K-N-O-T-T-Y underscore ropes. And you'll see what I'm talking about when you check those out. They are a nice, attractive lanyard, but they've got a buckle in the very back of them so you can slide your bands on. A little bit of a backstory. I had a lanyard I bought from Mike Benjamin like 12 or 13 years ago probably. And it had a thick neck cushion, so I'm like putting my bands on like, just putting them on the lanyard, going up the sides, and I kind of ran out of room once it hit the neck cushion, so I've just been putting my bands in a drawer the last few years, and actually just hunting with a bandless lanyard that I had made out of some quarter-inch Paramax paracord, and that works really great. It's functional. It's not great for putting bands on, though. So I've been kind of keeping my eyes out for my next lanyard and which one I'm going to buy. And I finally came to the decision to buy one of these Knotty Ropes lanyards after I had seen a couple of my friends using them, both Joe Heinz and my buddy Cole Frost, and also because of a conversation I had with my buddy Jeff Houston. Because he doesn't have a Knotty Ropes, he's just got a just a regular rope lanyard that he, you know, just it's like horse rope or whatever that he electrical tapes in the back so he can slide his bands on. And this is like right when I first figured out about Knotty Ropes lanyards and that buckle in the back. And I was hunting with Jeff and like, you know, who cares? He shows me, he's like, yeah, I electrical tape it back here so I can slide my bands on. I'm like, well, why don't you just, I don't know. Don't you just take your bands off, like, by opening them up with the pliers and then just pinch them on your lanyard? And he's like, no, I don't do that. I cut the leg and slide the band off and then slide it on my lanyard without ever opening it. Why? And he's like, well, you know, it keeps it all original. And he's, I don't know, you know, like, it might weaken the band to open it. And sometimes you can get them all screwed up by, you know, like, they won't be perfectly round anymore by opening it and then closing it. You could get marks on it from the pliers. I'm like, all right, I guess. Yeah, that kind of makes sense. And he goes, and check this out. shows me his rivets. Like, he's got a few rivet bands on his liner. He's like, check this out. Like, I didn't want to pop these rivets out of my, out of this. And you can see that the rivets have wear on them as well as the band. So you can see that, you know, the rivets have wear on them, the band has wear on them, and you keep everything just all original from the time that you see it. And he goes, and check this band out too. This one that he had was kind of like over, it was over crimped. So it had a little bit of one edge of it hanging over the other, and it left a little shadow mark. And he goes, so this band is exactly how the bander had put it on. He crimped it on a little bit too tight, and you can see the little bit of a shadow mark on one side to the other and how it wore that way. And I was like, fuck, that's cool. And I was like, damn it. All right. That makes perfect sense why you would do that and try to keep the bands original. Like, it just finally clicked. I was like, ah. And then I'm thinking about all my bands I've had for my entire life that I've just opened them up and basically just pinched on with my hand onto my lanyard before. I'm like, damn it. Okay. So then I was like, that makes perfect sense. I think I'm going to start doing that from now on. So the next lanyard I get, I would like to have that buckle in the back. Flash forward, I start seeing people, some of my buddies, Joe and Cole, with this Knotty Ropes lanyard. It's got a round braid on it, which is actually really comfortable. It's got a little bit of give to it, a little bit of stretch. And I reached out. I picked one up. It came in the mail. It's awesome, awesome construction, great braid. It's got the buckle in the back. And I went and I took my old lanyard and I cut my old lanyard. I'm like, all right, I'm convinced I'm never going to open these bands up again. So I cut my lanyard and I started pulling all the bands off of them. And man, Jeff was right, man. Like, I've only switched lanyards like one or two times in my life. And just from me opening them up with pliers, there were so many bands that had like a goofy, they weren't round anymore. They were either oval shape or they were pinched on kind of shitty. I was like, damn it, dude. Like, Jeff was right. And it just kind of bugged me. And sure enough, there's like plier marks on some of them. And then there's going to be more plier marks on them because I went through them with the pliers. I used a t-shirt, but to keep any marks from them. But I just tried to get them all back to like as round as I possibly could. So I wish I had kind of came to that conclusion earlier. I wish I had a Knotty Ropes lanyard long prior to this. But either way, if you're maybe just getting your band started or need to upgrade your lanyard, check them out. It's a great option so you're not opening your bands up with pliers anymore. I had never thought that that could be something that I would be like concerned about. But once somebody kind of explained it to me, I was like, God damn it. So check them out on Instagram, KNOTTY_ropes. They are a great lanyard. I'm really happy I got it. It's very attractive. The buckle is not going to come open, but just in case, I did put a little shackle on it with paracord, just in case it comes open for some reason during a hunt. I don't know. I just locked it in. Anyways, let's get started talking about, that's my product review. Let's talk about some articles and some interesting stuff that's kind of come up in the waterfowl world. If you've been following the Waterfowl Wednesday podcast this spring, like, or all of 2024, a repeated thing that's come up on the podcast many times is the Texas elimination of the spring conservation snow goose order. And there was a really good podcast. It came out yesterday. It's on the Ducks Unlimited podcast, and they had the waterfowl manager for Texas come on. And we'd even been talking about that on this podcast. Like, if I could get the Texas waterfowl manager on this podcast, I'd have so many questions for him, but I just don't know if I would be the best guy to ask them. And I was so happy to see that Ducks Unlimited had him on, because not only has he been on the podcast before, if you go back to previous Ducks Unlimited, I think he's been on twice talking about midwinter surveys. And so he's got a little bit of a rapport with the hosts, Mike Brasher and the other guy that hosts the Ducks Unlimited podcast, so they can actually have a little bit of a back and forth. He's done pretty good on the podcast before. I was so curious, like, what this guy was going to say about why they are eliminating the spring snow goose, why they're eliminating the spring snow goose season. Not only that, but they are reducing the bag limits down to 5 for snow geese during the regular season. So now every other central flyway state has a limit of 50 but Texas is going to 5. Every other central flyway state has a spring conservation order and Texas doesn't. Like, what is going on with that? Like, this is so out of the normal range of like what states are doing right now. It's so bizarre. I want to hear what he has to say about it. And I would encourage you guys to go to the Ducks Unlimited podcast and listen to it because it was kind of crazy. It was just kind of, I'm not saying he's crazy or what he's trying to do is crazy. It's just very bizarre. And I thought he talked fast, man. And he was talking circles around himself trying to justify this. This is just my takeaway from it. It seemed like in his head, he hated the spring snow goose season and he was going to find any justification to end it. And it's not that all of his points were bad. He does have some good points. My favorite point that he made about ending the spring snow goose season and reducing the bag limit during the regular season, my favorite one that he said, or the one that I said, like, okay, I see that, is he says, this is about protecting the resource that we have left. He said that, and I was like, good point. That's a good point, because snow geese have just been evacuating Texas for the last 30 years, and they just are not getting snow geese down there like they should have. But I felt like he had the results and he was searching for the data. You know what I mean? Like, the results were, I'm going to end the spring snow goose season and reduce the bag limit on snow geese. Now, how do I find data to justify that? There's some things he said that I really cringed when I heard him say it. And a couple of the things that I thought were really cringeworthy was when he was talking about how snow geese are being disrespected and mistreated. Okay, that's a thing to say right there. Like, by who? Just because we have a spring conservation season? And another thing he kind of characterized the spring conservation season as, he characterized it as, if you listen to the podcast, maybe I'm not quoting this perfectly correct, like, basically, like, we're letting people shoot these geese by any means necessary. You can kill these geese during the spring by doing all these the things you can't do in the fall, you can do in the spring by any means necessary. And he characterized it like that, like, what, like, we can drop dynamite out of helicopters on their fucking roost? Like, no, we can't kill them by any means necessary. What can we do in the spring that we can't do in the fall besides hunt them 30 minutes longer per day, take our plugs out of our guns, and use electronic calls? All right? That's just three things that I can think of off the top of my head. Maybe I'm missing one. That's just three things. That's not by any means necessary. It just seemed like, yeah, his, and the host of the Ducks Unlimited podcast did push back on him a little bit. Like, he said something like, if you look at the evacuation or the draining of snow geese out of Texas, if you look at it, it started the same year we started our spring conservation season. It's like, and his huge thing was about how hunting pressure is pushing snow geese out of Texas and has been for the last 30 years, which the one thing that I've always, when it comes to, when I push back about on somebody saying pressure pushes birds out of an area, pressure does affect waterfowl, but do birds leave pressure to go to an area that also has pressure? You know what I mean? Like, oh, all this hunting pressure pushed them out of Texas, huh? Great thing they're so safe in fucking Arkansas. Nobody hunts them there, right? Thank God. These geese were just getting hunted to death in Texas, so they moved on over to Arkansas where they never see a jump shooter and don't have 7 fucking outfitters pounding on every feed door trying to get permission on it. I mean, if pressure really did dictate where the birds would go, I'm pretty sure they'd all be in the central highlands of Mexico. Where, I mean, it's nothing for these birds to actually migrate to Mexico. Why wouldn't they do it? There's basically zero pressure. Anybody hunting Mexico is hunting ducks. There's very few people hunting snow geese down in Mexico. Why don't they migrate to Mexico anymore? There's no hunting pressure down there. There's still quite a few that migrate to Mexico. I mean, in the tens of thousands of snow geese are migrating down to Mexico on the coast and in the central highlands. And in there's an area called Durango. There's a bunch of snow geese migrating to Durango. Why didn't the Texas birds get kicked further south to Durango? It's worth a listen, guys. And let's preface this. I should have said this in the beginning. And he said this at the end as well, is they sell 1,000 spring snow goose licenses in Texas. So one thing to keep in mind is this is a sea change for spring goose hunting in the United States. However, it couldn't have happened to, it's not, there's almost no state in the Central Flyway that has fewer spring snow goose hunters than Texas. He said that something like 25,000 licenses were sold 30 years ago, like 99 when they first started, 25 years ago. Now it's like 1,000. So we have very few snow geese in Texas. We have very few spring snow goose hunters. So this isn't something like in a huge snow goose hunting state they're talking about eliminating the spring conservation season. But I will also say to look, this guy's got radical ideas and he wants to see what they happen. And he mentions in the podcast that like 70% of people in public comments were against this decision. But he's going to see it through and he's going to, you know, he's going to hang his hat on this. It's either going to be a good thing or a bad thing. And maybe it's not a bad thing that we have people actually taking some kind of, doing some experimental stuff like this out there to see how waterfowl react. I'm trying not to be just knee-jerk negative about this. The one thing I feel weird about is the precedent setting, the precedence that's been set by this. Like, would other states look into this? I haven't heard of any states looking into it besides just rumor mill type shit. I haven't seen any like official recommendations. Like they've been talking about this in Texas for a long time. It's been on my radar for a couple of years now. They made like an official recommendation and then it was open to public comment before it became official. There's no other state that has came across my radar that's had anything like that. So let's see what happens there. Definitely give that podcast a listen and come up with your own opinion. Some of that stuff, some of his points are good. And some of them I just feel he almost sounded like an anti-hunter. But one thing he does say is like conservation season was never meant to be a hunting season. This is a conservation order to eliminate a overabundant species and species that's not overabundant in Texas anymore. So good point. He's got good points. And just give it a listen. Give it a listen and see how you think about it. Let's move on to some other stuff. Let's move on to some other topics. I got a few articles saved here. One thing that came into my email the other day, I got an email from Onyx Hunt, from the Onyx app. They're doing a Zoom meeting or a Zoom webinar this week that might be interesting to anybody who's got an absolute crazy amount of content saved on their Onyx app. And I certainly do. If you open up my Onyx maps, it is just an absolute clusterfuck. So they've got Onyx Deep Dive Content Management. That's going to be a Zoom meeting on May 7th, 2024 at 7 p.m. Central Time. The description is as follows. Have more waypoints than you know what to do with. Difficulty finding content that you need when you need it. Too many markups cluttering your map. We've been there. Join us on May 7th for an in-depth masterclass covering how to use folders and stay organized in the field and at home. Live attendance is limited, so register today and sign on the day of. So anyways, that's a Zoom meeting. If you just Google Onyx Deep Dive Content Management Zoom meeting, it's next Tuesday. As long as I'm not taking care of the baby, I will be in attendance of that. I need to get my Onyx just more organized. Seems like a good thing to be to learn a little bit more about. Let's move on to some more articles here. I've got an article out of Arkansas. This is the MagnoliaReporter.com. W. Rice was nice during last duck season. This is by Jim Harris, Arkansas Game and Fish Commission, March 23rd. WRICE is the acronym that Arkansas uses for this program. They started up a few years ago where they have some private land duck hunting opportunities that you can get in on. I don't know a whole lot about them besides that. Let's read a little bit of this article, see if we can't learn a little bit more. But when I think about like taking a hunting trip to a different state, the very first thing I always look into is public hunting opportunities, because you can always travel to a different state and knock on doors, but that always is going to leave the, oh my God, what if we don't get permission anywhere? I always fall back on a public land option if I'm going to be doing a cool hunting trip, because that means at least I will be going hunting. 100% I will be going hunting. And a lot of states have these cool like private land or lottery hunting application type stuff. So you can kind of like, okay, I'll do one hunt on the public land and then I'll try to knock on doors. And if nothing happens, at least I went hunting. So W. Rice has been on my radar for a little while, just if I ever wanted to take kind of a cool trip to Arkansas, do a bucket list Arkansas duck hunt. Okay, the Arkansas Game and Fish Commission's Waterfowl Rice Incentive Conservation Enhancement Program, which is W. Rice, shifted in its fifth year from Wildlife Management Division Oversight to Private Lands Habitat Division for the 23-24 duck season. And hunter participation continues to swell. W. Rice applications regularly hit all-time highs during a season that, coincidentally, may have been the worst in the last 15 years in total ducks harvested, as well as total ducks and mallards surveyed on the landscape. Two things. One is, let's focus on habitat first. Garrick Duggar, Private Lands Habitat Division Chief, said, especially in a dry year like this, it's so hard for farmers to keep their fields flooded. Having these farmers to have this surface water available was important to ducks. It also proved that when we have a dry year like this, having a program available for ducks as public is important. The number of applications we saw this year. We had a record number of applications for multiple weeks throughout the season. This was not just one week, but we broke records for many weeks. The previous record was 500-something applications, and we broke it multiple weeks. When W. Rice began, its first goal was to incentivize farmers to keep rice or the remnants of it on fields after harvest or food for migrating waterfowl. The next component, which began the next year of the program, was allowing weekend hunting with a permit. By the third year, more than 40 fields across much of the Delta, some in other regions, were available for hunters. This year, the private land biologists secured 30 landowners to offer up 78 fields. Through water limitations, kept that number in the 50s and 60s late until the season. Not only is the program important for waterfowl to have water on the landscape when they get here during the winter migration, it's really important also to the public to have additional access to areas to hunt during a dry year. Blah, blah, blah. Anyways, if you want to take a dream trip to Arkansas or have like an option of somewhere to go hunt, check out the W. Rice program. I think that's a great thing. It's a great thing. It's an awesome thing. It's just public hunting on private land and increasing habitat for ducks. This is like a win-win-win-win-win. I wish I'd see more states doing something like that. Got an article here out of techcrunch.com. That's Mallard Bay is the Airbnb for guided hunting and fishing, which I had never heard of Mallard Bay, and I still don't really know what it is. So let's do a little reading, find out what Mallard Bay is. Americans spend more than $144.8 billion on fishing and hunting in 2022 alone, according to a survey by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. Guided hunting and fishing excursions are a substantial part of that industry, but they've largely remained offline. Bookings are done over the phone and paid for by physical checks or cash. Mallard Bay is looking to change that. The Houston-based startup is a marketplace for consumers who hunt and fish to find and book guided tours the same way they would book a hotel online. Mallard Bay is also a vertical SaaS platform to the outfitters themselves to bring their back office online and provide additional services like marketing. The startup announced this week a $4.6 million Series A led by Soul Ventures partner with participation from existing investor Acadian Capital Ventures and other angel investors. Logan Moe, co-founder and CEO of Mallard Bay, told TechCrunch he got the idea for the company after a botched hunting trip with his dad back when he was in college. He thought he had booked a three-day guided duck hunt in Oklahoma. When they showed up, they found out the hunt was double booked and their only option was to hunt for one day with 13 other people. That never happens. Moe never fired a single shot. At the time, Moe was working for his dad's startup, Waiter, which raised $24 million in venture capital before exiting in 2018 and thought he could launch a company of his own. In 2019, he and two other co-founders got to work. The original idea was just to create a marketplace like Airbnb for people to book these guided hunts. Once the company started asking outfitters and guides what they thought of the idea, they realized they were going to need to bring more to the table to get guides to sign on. That led them to start building out Guide Tech. I think I have heard of Guide Tech. Mallard Bay's back office solution for outfitters. Outfitters were receptive to the idea, knew that keeping up with the times was something they wanted to do, but inherently, outfitters are not business owners first. They started out as guides, and they're doing what they love, and they're building passion-based business. With us, being passionate about not only outdoors and going hunting and fishing, but also a software space, we kind of brought the domain expert to them. Hey, if you guys are going to make this, I think we get the idea. Oh, wait, hold on. They got a quote here. After the company got Toby Brolin, a hunting influencer, on the platform, more outfitters started to sign up. Brolin has booked more than $1 million in gross bookings, Mo says. The platform as a whole facilitated more than $6 million in gross bookings in 2023 and is on track to reach $30 million to $35 million by 2024. It's pretty interesting. Check out Mallard Bay or Guide Tech, I guess, if you're looking for some guided hunting or fishing trips. I'm definitely going to look into that for my business and see if I can get on that. Something that would make customers easier to find my business, or maybe something easier for me to book dates and keep things organized, would be a great option. I know I try to keep my public profile kind of low. Like, I don't want to. It's kind of a double-edged sword when you're an outfitter or when you are a guide, advertising. Because when you advertise, hey, I have awesome hunting, come hunt with me, you're advertising some for potential customers, and you're also advertising for competition. Like, hey, I got all these birds to kill. You should scout my area. So I try to keep my public and Instagram profile low. I don't have an Instagram page for my guide service. I do all of my bookings kind of just through the phone and just direct through me and through email. The one thing that I do is I'm on huntthenorth.com, and I do get some bookings through that. So I've had a positive experience with huntthenorth.com, and I'll definitely look into this. And another thing, too, is like I had to book a fishing trip last summer for me, my dad, and my brother. And boy, talk about wading into a world I had no frickin' idea what I was doing, booking a fishing trip. And I definitely needed some direction and some help. So if you need some direction or help, check out like things like Hunt the North and maybe this Mallard Bay. Definitely can help point you in the right direction. Let's move on to another article here. We got Outdoor News. Public asked to share their pheasant and turkey sightings in Minnesota. This was published April 1st, so 1 month ago. Minnesotans will be able to report observations of ringneck pheasants and wild turkeys in a citizen science effort by the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources that kicks off this May. Oh, so it didn't even start till today. We'll be asking folks to report any pheasant and turkeys they see in the wild from May through September, said Nate Huck, resident game bird specialist. We anticipate people will be enthusiastic about this new tool and the chance to report their sightings. Information from the reports will help the Minnesota DNR monitor pheasant and turkey population trends, evaluate conservation efforts, and make decisions about harvest regulations. People can report pheasants and turkeys of all ages using a mobile device or computer. People can enter the information on the Minnesota DNR website. The page will also include an opportunity to sign up for email updates, blah, blah, blah. If you didn't know, there's an opportunity right there. I'm the type of guy, I like to participate in helping the DNR out. I think I've always kind of had the impression, like, give the DNR as much good data as we possibly can. Like, if we can give them good data and good feedback of how we feel or what we think, all we can do is hope that they respond to it in a way that's positive for us. You have to feed the machine good data to get good regulations. If you don't feed the machine any data, or you feed it bullshit, like if you're lying on your hip, like on your hip report for some reason, for some unknown fucking weird reason, if you just feed the machine bullshit, don't be surprised when you get terrible regulations that spit back out of it. Anyways, a little rant right there. But anyways, yeah. Share your pheasant and turkey sightings. Why not? I came across some, here's a couple, I got a couple banding articles. This one is out of the University of Nebraska Media Hub, capturing ducks in southeast Kansas during December 2023. That's what this article is called, and it's just really short. I think you can find some more information if you were to do some deep Googling. During our first field season in 2023, we captured and leg banded 728 mallards during November and December, and deployed GPS devices on 54 of them. We will be capturing mallards within southeast Kansas during the fall and winter of 2024 and 2025. That's something, if I was a mallard band hunter, I'd want to learn more about southeast Kansas. I also have another article out of Pennsylvania here. If I was a mallard band hunter, I would be, my ears and eyes would be very perked on this. This is the SunGazette.com. Pennsylvania Game Commission to collect data on ducks via GPS transmitters. First picture they have is a double-banded mallard with a red geotransmitter tarsal band and a aluminum-fed band. So he's got two bands. The Pennsylvania Game Commission always wants to make sure they have information regarding animals and birds within the state. Are there any new nesting sites? Are certain birds changing their diets unexpectedly? What do the migration paths look like? All that can be tough to answer at times. So an idea was born. Backpacks. Not for people, but for ducks. Here's the second picture. They got a GPS transmitter backpack going on a hen mallard. And the also the tarsal-banded geolocator was a hen mallard as well. So if I was in Pennsylvania this next year, I'd be clapping some hens. Just kidding. I would definitely be keeping my eyes out on them hens' legs, though, and their backs. The Game Commission is equipping ducks with backpacks that contain GPS transmitters to learn more about not only duck habitat use, but their movements and reproduction. The transmitter, we've only been doing it for a couple of years, but we're teaming up with a bunch of different researchers we've been collaborating with. It's a new project. Mercy Mello, Pennsylvania Game Commission's environmental education specialist of the North Central region, said the North Central region put on 15. But we put out 15 in every region, so that's a total of 75-ish among six regions. The GPS transmitters are not just being used in Pennsylvania. Mello noted that New York, Delaware, New Jersey are all using similar transmitters to collect data, and that's being used to share with Pennsylvania and other states. We know ducks are spending their entire lives here in Pennsylvania, and most of the mallards are going to Quebec and Ontario for breeding. So isn't that not their entire life? The transmitter helps us figure out where they're going and survive. Find out where they're going and survive throughout the year. It's kind of a weird statement. It's going to be super valuable just for setting the foundation of what we know about these ducks from a research perspective. It's invaluable that we're making these decisions with bird biology in mind. We're trying wildlife management with birds in mind. Okay. So, this article kind of goes on for a little while longer. It's called, if you want to find this, it's on the Sun Gazette, Pennsylvania Game Commission to collect data on ducks via GPS transmitters. If you're a band hunter, something like that should really perk your ears up. There's going to be names in here. There's going to be information to collect. Another thing about being a band hunter is you know that almost all, nearly all banding projects are done on public land. So typically where they put on these cool bands is a place that you can hunt. So if there's any way to deduce that information about where exactly what wildlife management area or waterfowl production area that they actually are utilizing for this study, it can get you pretty close, at least in that neighborhood of potentially killing something like your dream band. Anyways, that's my two articles that I had about cool mallard bands getting put on. I've got an article here. This one raises my eyebrows. This came across my feed. It's from The Columbian. And The Columbian is a newspaper out of Clark County, Washington. And just kind of raises my eyebrows about an interesting hunting opportunity. I'm always looking for, like, just a cool hunting opportunity. And this kind of seems to perk my ears up a little bit. Spring permit goose season sees low pressure hunt largely on private land. Special rules involved in a hunt that runs from February 10th to March 6th. Those are cool dates. I don't have much going on February 10th to March 6th. What kind of a cool hunt do we got? We got an old-timer guy in a picture here. Looks like he's on a cool pasture pond with mountains in the background, a dog, and four dead honkers. Just in like the most old guy photo you can possibly imagine. Oh, he's got two dogs. You can't see one of the honkers because one of the dogs is covering it up. It's belly down, of course. Anyways, the spring goose season within the Northwest Goose Permit Zone is an excellent opportunity for waterfowlers to enjoy some late season action. If you do not have access to private lands, there are other options. Anyways, let's burn through this article quick. I think we're getting pretty close to the half hour mark. Yeah, we're at 33 minutes. Let's make this our last article here. I hunkered down with my dog in heavy brush in a corner of the pond that the geese like to use in an escape route. From my position, I could not see the geese that were gathered at the far end of the pond, but but I soon heard the cacophony of geese as they took to the air. A split second later, two shots pierced the goose song, and I knew my son Jeff had gotten close enough to a shot. Nice. Some old-timer with his son just jumping roost. The calls grew closer, and soon I could see the flock, just 15 feet off the surface of the water and headed straight for me. As they came within 20 yards, I dropped one, and the shot scattered the flock. I swung on another bird as it passed to my right, and I dropped that one clean, too. My lab was soon at work with the retrieves. Dope. So this guy and his son went on opposite sides of a goose roost and jumped it in the morning, and that's how they got those four birds. All right, well, whatever, you know, get it how you live, dude. We were hunting the spring season in the Northwest Goose Permit Zone, a hunting opportunity that does not see anywhere as near as much pressure as the regular goose season. It's a chance to hunt unpressured birds, but there are special rules involved in this hunt. Clark and Cowiltz counties are in the Goose Management Unit number 2, and the season begins Saturday, February 10th. It runs through March 6th, with hunting allowed 3 days of the week, Saturday, Sunday, and Wednesday. Perhaps the biggest obstacles for most hunters is the fact that the National Refuges and WDFW lands are closed to goose hunting during the spring season. Interesting. The hunt is designed to give hunters another option combined with managing goose conflict on private land, said Eric Holman, the District 10 wildlife biologist for WDFW's Region 5. Keeping the public marshes closed to hunting gives the birds a place to go to keep them off of the private agricultural lands. He is quick to point out that not all public lands are off-limit to goose hunters. You can hunt some of the Department of Natural Resources aquatic lands, he said. He also points to Bureau of Land Management properties and Forest Service lands can also hold some habitats that attract geese. Many rivers are also open to hunting, including much of the Columbia River. My son and I had been lucky enough to get permission to hunt a private pasture and pond that attracted a lot of birds. There were also small ponds on nearby BLM land that at times offered excellent gunning over decoys. However, spring birds are decoy wary, and when that is the case, we prefer to jump the flocks. Decoy shy geese will sometimes come to a call when there is not a set out, with single birds being especially vulnerable. The result can be some good pass shooting. For hunters that prefer to decoy birds into range, movement within the set will help, with the best option being flagging. Northwest Goose Permit Zone Regulations. Hunters that wish to take part in the hunt must first acquire a permit. That means passing a test about identifying the 7 different subspecies of Canada geese that frequent Southwest Washington. The purpose of this is to protect the endangered dusky Canada goose. By the way, I am permitted to do that. I took the test online one night when I was bored. It took me about 35-40 minutes of studying and actually taking the test. The test is good for both Washington and Oregon, and it was pretty easy, so that's not a big barrier, but it does keep a lot of people out of there. You do have to take that test. The subspecies of geese had fallen on hard times since an earthquake in 1964 raised the delta they used for breeding. That dried out much of the habitat, and the numbers of dusky Canada geese have fallen precipitously. According to the WDFW Northwest Goose Permit Zone pamphlet, a subspecies of Canada goose is defined blah, 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 blah. Okay, okay. This is just the rest about taking the test. There's a little bit more information. This is an article in the Columbian, and the article is called Spring Permit Season Sees Low Pressure Hunt Largely on Private Land. That's the exact type of thing that's just like hits my radar screen, and I'm like, dude, possibly? Really? Okay, I'm gonna look into that. I'm going to the Washington DNR website. I'm gonna look up, get more information about this hunt. You know, what are some of the spots I can hunt? Where are the spots I can't hunt? Is this something I could go out with, you know, 18 decoys and 6 floaters in the back of a truck and a couple of layout blinds and go shoot some honkers in March? When I don't have nothing else going on with some beautiful scenery with mountains. I mean, it seems like something that it would be right up my alley as somebody who's always looking for my next waterfowl do-it-yourself adventure. I mean, this is bingo. So many boxes getting checked on that. But if you are also, hey, maybe it'd be for you too. Maybe it's something that you'd actually participate in. Thank you guys very much for listening to this episode of Waterfowl Wednesday. I would really love to take you hunting if you are interested in a guided goose hunt. I'm 45 minutes east of the Minneapolis St. Paul International Airport. I'm doing some really good deals right now. It's $150 a person per day, no meals, no lodging, but I'm going to help you find an Airbnb. We got some awesome restaurants in town. If you guys want to come and do a hunt with me, if you book 5 people, you get the 6th for free. So put together a group of 6. That's if you book 3 days. So book a 3-day package with me. Come hunt 3 days with me. You're going to pay 150 times 5 times 3. Divide that out. Figure that out. And I mean, I don't know where you're going to find a better deal on a 3-day hunt package than that. Hey, right now I got a couple of 4.25 and 4.6 Nick Johnson Signature Series Pacific Goose calls tuned up, ready to rock. Let me know if you're interested in that. And if you are interested in getting better on learning how to blow your short reed goose call, hey, be sure to check out Pacific Calls, the Goose Tech app, sponsored by Pacific Calls. The Goose Tech app is going to be a great app for you to learn how to blow your short reed goose call better. It's a one-time purchase of $20. Definitely worth it. Anything is worth every product available on the market right now. DVDs, the Goose Tech app, the Roost from the Mulkier guys, everything is worth getting better at blowing your goose call. So invest in that. Invest in a good goose call. Invest in learning how to blow it. And we'll catch you guys next week. Thank you very much for tuning in.
Life that has the stories to back it. A life to be proud of. It's a Winchester life.
Yeah, baby. 6'8 Western. Oh, mule deer, baby. Right there.
Tune in every Tuesday at 7 p.m. Eastern on Waypoint TV. On Mondays, head offshore with Captain Scott Walker and Steve Roger for breathtaking deep sea adventures.
Coming to me.
Double. He's jumping.
Oh!
Look at that belly.
Don't miss Mondays with Into the Blue, brought to you by Academy Sports and Outdoors from 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern.
Tell a few fish stories along the way.
On Waypoint TV, the destination for outdoor entertainment.